If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
We're trying to avoid going into full litigation and just working with attorneys to make sure that the process can be brought to a closure. Anyone who tells you, no, we never had any problems, I mean, they haven't been in business long enough.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Alina is the founder and managing partner of Samo Financial. It's a boutique private equity firm specializing in helping busy business owners and IT professionals passively invest in commercial real estate. Her passion is to teach others how to build wealth by investing passively. Alina is the founder of two meetup groups named The Power of Passive Investing Through Real Estate. And as part of that, she helps investors obtain education about alternative investing. Alina has helped her clients acquire and invest in over 2,200 apartment doors, over $45 million in self-storage, and over $10 million in mobile home parks. She lives in northern New Jersey with her loving husband and two awesome kids. Alina, welcome to the show.
Sam, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Excited to be on your show.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you so much. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show. Where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
It's been a long journey, but definitely very exciting. A lot of obstacles on the way. My journey started almost 30 years ago when I immigrated to this country with my mom. And I was at the point of choosing my college and college degree. I didn't know what I wanted to study. And I heard someone saying that, hey, you're good with numbers, you'll be good with accounting. And I just went along with that, got my degree in accounting, worked as a tax accountant in a public firm, never really enjoyed it, switched to private. That didn't work out either. And I realized that I needed to run away from accounting. And when I did that, I moved into the world of information technology, where I had a successful 20-year career. And while my roles and career were progressing, so were the tax brackets for myself and my husband. And I realized that I needed to find ways to lower taxes since I couldn't lower our tax brackets. So in that journey, I came across real estate, started doing the research. And then after a while, I decided that the strategy that I need to implement would be out-of-state strategy because I couldn't find anything locally in New Jersey. So as an out-of-state strategy, I came across syndications, and becoming an equity partner in syndication seemed like the best choice at the time. So I took action, did my research, invested in one syndication. And after that, the snowball effect happened. I started investing in the second and then third and so forth. And I invested in a whole bunch. And after sharing it with people around me, friends, coworkers, I realized that most people have never heard of syndications and didn't know there is this passive way to invest in real estate. So I decided to change that and help other people follow my footsteps. And that's how Samo Financial was born, with that sole purpose of helping other people to passively invest in real estate, generate residual income, and save on taxes. And I've been managing Samo for over 3 years now, while still working in IT full-time. And last year during COVID, my full-time position was eliminated and I decided to take it a step further and go into real estate full-time, which I did and was really happy and never looked back. And then a mutual friend introduced me and my current partner. So what is not in my bio yet, I need to update that, is that I also joined another firm, which is TF Management Group. It's a fund management company. And what we do is we build a fund of funds based on investor needs and goals. And we offer investors with different goals to invest in a variety of our funds. And so in addition to Sam, I'm also working as a head of investor relations for the TF Management Group at the time. That's where I'm at. Really excited about my journey and very happy that how the events turned out last year.
Wow, that's fantastic. You should be really proud of everything that you've accomplished thus far. I'm really curious, what is the difference between what Samo Financial does and TFT, what do you call it, TFT Financial?
TF Management. SAMO Financial primarily concentrates on educating investors about passive syndication investments and how to access real estate. And it helps people to understand real estate investing fundamentals in general, where TF Management is purely a fund management company. So the business is a complementary in nature. First, people start learning about real estate, they get acclimated, they understand how syndications work. And then when they're ready, they decide that they're ready to start investing, that's when we introduce them to our family of funds.
Gotcha. That's fantastic. So you guys are doing a fund-to-funds model out of the TF Management.
Yep.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. And is this what the one where you're doing apartments and self-storage and mobile
everything.
Home parks?
Yes, we do everything. It's a pure real estate firm, so we cover all of the assets within real estate. And actually, in addition to regular value adds that we're all used to, some of our funds have investments in the opportunities that have been pandemic-driven, which is hotels to the affordable housing conversions. And these have been home run for us and for our investors. I mean, we've seen some of these projects go full cycle, and the results are just absolutely amazing. We're really happy that we've took advantage of these opportunities, and we're constantly searching for more partners that are active in this world of buying distressed hotels and converting them into multifamily.
Yeah, that is definitely unique and niche. How are you vetting your operators?
Most of the operators come to us through the existing network that my partner Mike and I have. Mike has been in real estate for over 20 years, has over a decade of experience as a fund manager, so he's built an extensive network. I've built a network of operators as well since I started SAMO, which has been slightly over 3 years. So majority of the projects come through the operators that have been vetted in the past and we have worked with in the past. We do meet new people, but we have an extensive vetting process, and it takes some time for us and them to get to know each other until we finally pull the trigger and decide to invest with them. But first, we always vet the operator. That comes down to having a number of discussions. Then we look at their prior projects, the existing operations, infrastructure, and then we look at the existing projects. We go through our own due diligence and underwriting of the project. So that takes sometimes as well until we actually decide to pull the trigger and bring one of the other projects into our funds.
Right. What are some challenges that you guys face in the fund-to-funds model?
It just like syndications, it takes time for the investors to get acclimated and understand the fund model. They're used to seeing funds through the stock market, where real estate is introduced through REITs, real estate investment trust, and where REITs are purely mutual funds that invest in real estate. There is a significant difference between REITs and private equity real estate. And one of the main differences, of course, is that within a REIT, you will not know what kind of projects you're investing. The fund manager is deciding on that. And you will definitely not get a direct line or a direct email to that fund manager for sure. That will not be offered to you. You'll get probably the support person at the most. Where with the private real estate funds, first of all, of course, you get direct access to all the people on the team, including the fund manager. Second of all, maybe upfront, we will not know all of the projects that we have, but we certainly, once the fund closes, we will list all of the projects and we'll provide updates on all of the projects to our investors. So it takes some time for people to digest that and to understand the difference, because a lot of folks are used to the model where they say, okay, I'm investing in 123 Main Street and it's apartment complex or it's a storage. Where here we're telling them, for example, if we look at our Tampa Growth Fund, we'll tell them that we have, let's say, 12 projects right now, and you know, this is what they are, that's where they're located, these are the strategies. And it's just for people, it's hard to absorb. But over time, as they get acclimated, they understand the difference. They understand the advantages and disadvantages. Obviously, each niche has its own pros and cons. But for people that understand its advantages and take it against the disadvantages, they realize how much more effective the fund model, because it saves them a lot of time. What most investors want to do is they want to diversify their portfolio. And what can be better than, instead of looking for each individual project, just having access to the fund that already has a diversified portfolio? That's huge. I mean, that's a time saver for you up front, because in this case, you're only reviewing and doing due diligence on a fund manager, their track record, and the offering they present. Where on the individual projects, you need to review every single one, talk to every single operator, and have your pros and cons and discussions with them. So it's a huge time saver.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of merits for investing in a fund. And I guess there's two ways, just for our listeners to clarify this, there's two ways you can have fund to funds, right? You can have a fund such as yours where you guys have, maybe it's a closed-end fund where you have a specific dollar amount you're raising. Is that right?
Sure. We have open-ended and closed-ended. But like you said, it's a fund-to-funds model. It's a blind pool. So upfront, the investors may know maybe of a handful of projects that are going in. But eventually, once the fund closes or comes to a point where we don't bring any more projects in, they'll know about all of the investments that are invested through this fund. Where I'm guessing you're referring to the other model where the operator has grown to the point where it's not worth for them to just raise 10 million or 15 million. They'd rather raise maybe 20 or 30 million fund and buy projects through that and put those projects into their fund.
Right. Yeah, that's the other way. And then I guess maybe even potentially third way you can dissect this would be to have somebody, as opposed to coming on as a co-GP or something like that, they could come on and invest in a single asset, but as a fund that invests in that single asset. So lots of different ways that could be done.
For sure.
So why do you guys choose one to be a closed end and one to be an open-ended fund?
For a variety of reasons. So a lot depends on the goals of the investors, and we're trying to cater to those goals. So for the open-ended fund, it's a fund that provides a combination of income and growth and concentrates more. There's a heavier emphasis on the income than on growth. And to provide that constant income, we chose it to be open-ended because we can continuously add project to that so that income can continuously grow. And with that fund, again, we can decide when to close it and if we want to close it. And once we do that, we'll probably open a new one. Where with the closed-ended funds, they're a little bit easier to operate because you have a finite timeline. You know how much time you have to raise the funds. You know how much time you have for the whole fund duration and so forth. But there are, again, pros and cons to both. We'll probably stick more towards the closed-ended model because it's, again, it's easier to operate. But we decided to give it a try and work with an open-ended fund just to see whether maybe it generates more extensive investor interest in the first place.
What are the additional requirements? You say an open-ended fund is more difficult to operate. What does that mean?
Well, when it comes to fund management and fund administration, when it's open-ended fund, you have to constantly monitor, not that you don't do it on a closed-ended fund, but you have to be very careful in monitoring all of the, making sure that all of the checks and balances are in order and due diligence on every single project and make sure that everything aligns and everything is accounted for. So it's a lot more time consuming to operate an open-ended fund in general.
Yeah.
Right. In our case, we chose a third-party administrator that sort of works as an audit, if you will, because we prefer not to do anything in-house and to be an open book so investors know that we're not cooking per se anything inside. Everything is cooked outside by third-party administrator whom we pay, and we allow them to full control of our books so they can determine what's going on, how the fund is performing, and provide the financial statements directly to our investors.
Right. No, that would make all the sense in the world. I mean, not only from just ease of sleeping at night so your investors know that you're up and up, but also just from a purely logistical standpoint. Like, you guys don't want to be spending your days compiling those reports and doing that sort of accounting. So That's interesting. Have you guys run into any problems with your operators that you have had to creatively overcome?
We've had some problems with the operators, and of course, that typically involves working with attorneys to solve those issues. We're trying to avoid going into full litigation and just working with attorneys to make sure that the process can be brought to a closure. Anyone who tells you, no, we never had any problems, I mean, they haven't been in business long enough. Because every single person that has been in any business long enough, whether it's real estate or something else, will at some point have experience using legal guide, help of legal counsel, one way or the other. It's absolutely, I don't want to say necessary, but it's part of being in business. There is always something, and you know, again, whether it's litigation or whether it's having to negotiate certain terms that didn't work out, or someone is not performing as they were expected to perform, but there's always some sort of trouble or an obstacle that needs to be that needs to involve attorneys. So yes, for us, it's not an exception as well. And we're working through it. We seem to be on a path to progress right now, but it's been taking a long time. It's probably been over a year or two.
Are there some things, as you think about whatever those various scenarios are, that you guys could do to prevent that from happening again? Or are there some different steps you would take, or things, maybe some red flags you saw, you said, oh, or didn't see that maybe you should have seen, that you say, okay, you know, this is something I'm looking out for now?
Not from the fund standpoint. Again, I joined the group this year, so that's been recent. From my personal standpoint, so for Sema's been in business over 3 years. I had experience with one of the earlier projects that I was working on through Sema, where I have not performed the due diligence detailed enough and checked all of the financial and criminal background of one of my partners. And if I were to do that thorough due diligence from the get-go, I would have ended up probably skipping working with that partner. But I ended up, you know, I missed that step of going deeper, and I had to hire an attorney as well and work through that case. Luckily, that case has been closed and done. But, you know, that you learn from your own mistakes. So every single person after that, I've taken them through the full background check, financial check, and criminal check, just to make sure that everything's in order with them. And that's the partner that I want to work with.
No, that's absolutely great. That's absolutely great. Yeah, those are hard lessons learned. But, you know, once you learn, they're with you. So.
For sure. And, you know, we as humans typically learn much better, unfortunately, from our own mistakes. And as much as we try to pass it to friends, colleagues, kids, it's still hard. You know, typically your own problem sticks a lot harder to you.
That's absolutely true. Alina, let's jump here into the final four if we can.
Sounds good.
What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Educate yourself as much as possible so you fully understand what you're getting yourself into.
I like that. Question number two is, when it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
I've invested in mentors, I've invested in masterminds, and I'm constantly working on improving my mindset.
That's great. Question number three is, when it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
One of my favorite ways to give back is by educating kids and giving them the choice of getting the financial literacy. So every single chance I get to help out the kids in underprivileged communities, I do that. And it doesn't always have to involve the lecture. There were a few times where we brought the gifts to the kids during Christmas times. There were a few times where we brought the shopping bags during Thanksgiving. So whatever I can, I try to do it, and I try to teach my kids follow that example. Also do the best they can with that.
I love it. That's great. Alina, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
They can email me either at alina@semofinancial.com or alina@tempofunding.com. Either one works. Or they can find me on LinkedIn through my name, Alina Trigo.
Wonderful. We'll put those in the show notes as well so that can be found there. Alina, thank you so much for your time today. This was great.
Thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.